Chapter 11. For reasons neither of them knew, they asked Claire to stay after work with them that afternoon to go through the books. They both wanted to know how much money fine print had actually taken in after taxes. Neither of them voiced it, but they were basically looking to see if fine print would be able to survive a settlement. That was, even if Disney allowed the suit to be settled out of court. To Brian, it was an excruciating experience. He hated numbers, was no good with figures, and now it seemed that those very things were the lifeblood of the business. The information Clara was currently scrolling through in her spreadsheets could mean life or death for fine print. They went over the numbers while eating pizza and drinking beer in the graphics department on neat little Excel spreadsheets that Clara had made. The joy and accomplishment they felt in knowing that they had cleared just over $68,000 in just under 2 months was dashed when they realized that it could all be gone in a snap if this Disney suit went the way David Farson seemed to think it would. If so, that $68,000 would mean nothing. Once they got deep into this work, time seemed to drag on. Waiting for the call from Farson was gut-wrenching. The hours that passed between their initial meeting with him and the three of them sitting down to Clara's spreadsheets were horrendous and painful. Brian had gone through every possible scenario, and none of them were any good. In the end, he blamed himself and Jake for not bothering to consider the consequences of so blatantly manipulating well-known characters. It also made him wonder if they would have been able to avoid such a blunder if they'd had Clara on staff back then. Surely she would have thrown up a warning flag. She would have given them a lashing for even considering such a thing. It made Jake value her that much more as an employee. It was all speculation and a waste of their time, though. Brian tried to forget about it and tried to force a solution to the problem. Now that they knew what sort of money they had to work with, he found himself trying to comprehend how such a seemingly harmless move could cost so much. Of course, any damages Disney wanted to collect were all speculation at this point, but the bit of research he'd done online indicated that they may very well go broke as a result. Afraid he was on the brink of some sort of emotional break, Brian stood up and left the graphics department. He walked to the print room, where he started loading up the next job in line. He did so slowly and methodically, very well aware of the fact that he may not be doing this for much longer. His hands shook and his stomach was in knots, but he made himself get through the work. As he was adjusting the screen on the press, the phone rang. Every time it rang in the last few hours, his heart leaped into his throat in fear that it was David Farson calling with news from Disney lawyers. He let it slide this time, focusing on the work in front of him. He was nearly done lining it all up when Clara came to the door. "Sorry, boss," she said. She was trying to be her usual chipper self, but there was legitimate concern in her eyes. It made her look a whole new kind of pretty. "This is the call. Farson is on the phone." Brian stopped for a moment, his hand resting on the screen he had just set up. He took a look around the room and wondered if he'd be viewing it differently once this call was over. "Let's face the music, then," Brian said. He left the print room, and as he walked out, Clara placed her hand on his back and gave him a reassuring caress. He gave her a smile that felt incredibly fake, and they walked back toward the graphics department together to see what kind of news David Farson had for them. The news wasn't good. It took no more than 10 minutes, and then, when the call was over, the graphics department was as quiet as a graveyard. As far as Jake was concerned, it felt like one too. As far as they were concerned, fine print was dead. David Farson had stayed on the phone with Mrs. Emerson and two other Disney lawyers for nearly an hour as Farson tried to find some way to get Jake and Brian out of their predicament. As Farson had warned, and as Clara had even mentioned when they first received the call from Mrs. Emerson, the folks at Disney would not budge. When it was all said and done, fine print had printed T-shirts bearing the likenesses of two prominent Disney figures. More than that, the characters were shown in ways that Disney would certainly never condone. Those shirts were then sold to a fraternity, meaning that fine print made money on Disney properties. Those shirts were worn and even sold at the event the fraternity held, meaning more money was made on the shirts. Fine print was being held liable for copyright infringement, not to the highest degree, but pretty close. Farson had tried everything he knew, but, in the end, the best he could do was arrange to have the matter settled out of court. "For how much?" Brian said. There was the slightest of pauses on the other end of the phone before Farson gave his answer. When he did, it was like a small bomb was dropped through the telephone lines.
$250,000.
Clara let her first tear trail down her face. Jake saw this and nearly lost it as well. "So this is what it comes down to," he thought. The three of them all offered up their own aggrieved suggestions as to how to get out of it, but Farson informed them that it would do no good. In fact, he went so far as to say that when compared to some cases he had seen, this was really just a slap on the wrist. Even when Clara had to stop talking due to her sobs, Farson kept giving the bad news. There was simply nothing that he could do.
"So what the hell are we supposed to do now?" Brian asked.
"I'm sorry," Farson said, "but you'll have to pay it one way or the other. In cases like this, they'll typically work with you, but if you have any money tied up in your business, it's most likely going to be theirs." At this, Jake stood up from his chair and placed his hands on his head as if he was getting a very bad headache. "If you have any questions along the way, let me know and I'll be glad to help," Farson said. "In the meantime, I'll be working with their lawyers to try to buy you as much time as possible to figure out how to come up with the money. If you're at a total loss as to a financial solution, I can help you there too." Farson ended the call as politely as he could. Jake heard genuine sorrow in the man's voice, and in an odd way, made him feel a bit better about the situation. He was probably saddened to see a local business get hit hard by a major company, as anyone in their position would. In that moment, though, the feeling of injustice and unfairness was the last thing on Jake's mind. He was too concerned with the quickly approaching reality that Fine Print would go broke and probably lose everything, right down to the last scrap of equipment. He looked at his computer and watched the Fine Print logo dancing across as his screensaver. He felt like someone had just punched him in the gut. Seeing that logo now felt like the punchline to a really cruel joke.
"What are we gonna do?"
Brian asked. Before Jake could say, "I don't know," Clara started crying again. Jake gave her a clumsy hug and Brian placed his hand on her shoulder, doing his best to comfort her. Sadly, it was the closest the three of them had ever felt. They felt like an actual family now that they had experienced not just the highs, but the lowest of lows as well. When Brian threw the dart at the cork of the board, there was anger and frustration behind its velocity. The board even shook slightly at the dart hit.
"It doesn't seem right at all," he said as he took his place by the wall behind the line for dart throwers.
Jake and Clara were there with him, licking their wounds and trying to numb the painful reality of what the day had meant for Fine Print with a few rounds of beers. Deep down, Brian knew that running to a bar in a time of pain and financial distress was incredibly irresponsible, but he didn't care. The three of them still had that strong bond, still felt like a single unit. They were going to suffer through this together and do it with as much tact and unity as possible. They'd see it through until the end, no matter how ugly it might get. As for now, where better to develop that sort of unity than at a bar with a few drinks and a rather aggressive game of darts?
"No, it doesn't," Jake said as he stepped up to the line for his shot. "But I'm not letting myself get too upset about it. It was a very stupid mistake on our part."
"We should have been smarter." Brian shook his head despairingly and took a drink from his beer.
"Remember the kid that placed the order? He was desperate. Would have done damn near anything he asked. And now I'd sort of like to kill him."
"That's true," Jake said with a laugh. He couldn't help but smile at remembering how ambitious and excited they were about everything that was slowly creeping up over the horizon. It felt like just yesterday, but in his mind's eye, it felt like years ago. It was hard to believe that it had been just 7.5 months ago. Other than that, the conversation lagged for the remainder of the night. Clara tried to turn the conversation towards what courses she planned on taking during her final semester as a college student. Maybe she'd do grad school or go for an internship in a bigger city so she could get the hell away from here. She also complained how Foster College had no real pool of potential boyfriends. Brian and Jake agreed with her on this, seeing as how they didn't see how any man would be suitable for Clara. But even Clara's dreams of a brighter future couldn't get them to break out of their funk. The night sped by like some fevered dream, a stark comparison to the reality they had all just faced. No matter how quickly you can build something up, it can be taken away from you even faster.